Hey, welcome everybody to another episode of the Under Reasonable Art of Living podcast. I'm your host, Gerhard Molin, and as always, enjoy the music. Welcome back to another episode, and thank you for tuning in. As always, I hope you're doing fine wherever you are right now. And yeah, I'm actually recording this episode shortly before my weekly team meeting with my other three co-founders of my Lumi. And I think today it's going to be, so first of all, for the first time listeners, welcome. What is this podcast about? It's really about, reflection of my life. At the beginning, there were a lot of guests. At the moment, there's not enough time to actually schedule guests because we are working on our own startup, My Lumi, which is an app that helps you to reconnect with your body-mind intelligence, so to say. It really helps you to tune in with yourself every day and develop a self-awareness in a very joyful way. And I think as of lately, this becomes a bit of a diary of this startup life. You actually become a live audience, how things develop. And things develop so fast on a weekly basis. And I think I would have loved to listen to a podcast, where you always know you listen to startup journeys when they are really successful or they failed. But I think it's quite cool if you can listen to something where it's like just right in the in between, like you are getting live updates, how actually it is to run a startup. If you ever thought about trying to do or run one or create make your idea kind of like a reality. So yeah, this is podcast all about. It's also like, just open forum for my thoughts, reflections. And I hope at worst you will enjoy some white noise that calms your nervous system. And today, I'm not drinking this time. This time, I'm not drinking Peruvian ceremonial chocolate. I'm drinking one of my favorite teas as of late, Milky Oolong. I mentioned it, in previous episodes. First discovered it in Helsinki. It's an amazing tea. The tea leaves, Oolong teas, they're in between green and black tea, so from the oxidation. So it's quite a relatively white tea, let's put it that way. And the tea leaves, I've been told actually that from this Milky Oolong, they actually are still like one of the tea guy told me they're not the highest quality of the Oolong, even though Oolong is already like high quality, but they kind of like use whatever is kind of like leftovers of the Oolong tea leaves. And Oolong tea leaves, what makes them so expensive and so special, they are not shredded. They're like whole pieces and dried. So they become very like small balls. And then when you moisture them, you can see the whole tea leaf unfolding. It's beautiful. And what makes Milky Oolong so special, the tea leaves are steamed in milk. And it's so crazy delicious. Really, I love it. It's for me. So since I discovered this tea, for me, drinking tea became a completely new game, to say. Really, it's like I've never, you mostly drink green tea. You've probably, if you're like more interested, experience like better green tea, but I never kind of like ventured beyond green tea. And for me, always black tea was the Earl Grey tea or English breakfast tea from the supermarket. But then I discovered this new world of, wow, there's like so much more. Even like black tea, there's so much amazing black tea out there. And Milky Oolong. Let me take a sip. Oh yeah, I got feedback that I take very long sips. Enjoy this very long sip. So yeah, today's episode, it's quite something. Actually, just inspired me today to talk about it. Yeah. Oh, by the way, if you are listening to this, make sure to follow or subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Then you can get notified, because I stopped promoting this podcast on my socials for a while, probably for quite a while now, because I need really to focus on my Lumi. The company just takes all my energy. And to be honest, the biggest joy this podcast, or biggest joy I get from this podcast, is just recording the audio. Creating social media and all this promotion stuff never really brought me joy, to be honest. So make sure to follow or subscribe to this podcast so you get notified automatically. So yeah, what's happened this week? Again, I will try to categorize it. Actually, last episode, I categorized it in 4 to 5 things. One thing that stressed me, one thing that humbled me, one thing that gave me joy, one thing that inspired me, and one thing to be grateful for. And actually, let's start, before we get into this, with a little Lumi update. So now we started last week to invite new members. We're now cracking close to 200 early access signups. It's so crazy. And we started on February 1st with 70, and now at 200, and there's another 100 coming probably by end of this month. So we are around a 12% week-to-week growth rate at this stage. I mean, like, it's an insane number. And to be honest, it's most likely not the case that we'll be able to maintain this after this month. But it's still a nice trajectory. At this early stage, it's beautiful to see people just interested in what we're doing. And it's just amazing to develop this product. It's early stage with users. That's what we are here for, actually. So yeah, really cool. And this week, actually, we were supposed to officially form the company. And actually, we decided on Finland, so that's for sure. It actually stressed me last week to decide between that. But we might have to postpone it. And this brings me to actually the topic of this week's episode. Something that just comes, it's just so startup life. And it really humbled me. So let's start with this. This week's really humbled me. It's like, you know, like, then we were planning to officially form a company on Thursday in Finland. And then just out of nowhere, today we got, there was a friend of mine. He is also, his company actually is part of the Y Combinator. The Y Combinator is, we are applying for the Y Combinator as well. End of April is like the most prestigious accelerator in Silicon Valley for, startups, and you're going to go there for 3 months and get access to amazing coaches and networks, and on top of financial investment. And yeah, we were ready to go to Thursday to form the company officially. But then luckily today, a friend of mine, he told me, like, you know, because I asked him, is there a disadvantage if we, for example, have not formed a company before the application, or is there a disadvantage if the company is not a company from the United States? And his company is also like not, it's actually a company in Germany, but he told us something that is quite, yeah, we would have never thought, or like, you don't get this information. So what happens if you get in this accelerator, which is based in Silicon Valley? They only invest in US-based companies. Kind of makes sense. So in an incorporated company, Inc. So what if you have, so it's not an issue if you have a company already outside the States, but what is required in order to get investment, you have to incorporate another US-based company, and you may have to make your company outside of the States, for example, the one we would have in Finland, you would have to make it a subsidiary or auxiliary of the company in the company in the United States. And this is what they call a Delaware flip. So that you incorporate basically your EU-based, in our case, Finland-based company, and it becomes part of the US company. And he told us, like, yeah, they had a company before already because they had some pre-seed investment. And so pre-seed investment is very early stage. You just kind of like, it's the stage where you have an idea and a prototype, and you want to see if there's like any kind of, if it's feasible and you can, there's any form of traction. So actually, we are somewhere between pre-seed and seed actually at the moment. But yeah, what he told us is because if you want to get investment from this accelerator, which is 500,000, you would have to do this Delaware flip. And in order to do this, that's your responsibility. You have to work with lawyers to do it properly. And it costed them 35,000 euros to flip that company. Wow. It's crazy. Man, like the chances that we get in this accelerator, there are, to be realistic, it's a 1% chance, 1% to 5% chance. Really, really low. Like even it doesn't, you can have still have a very good application, but you never know who do you run against it and who is looking at your application. And, you know, there's so many factors you just cannot control. But just imagine we now formed a company on Thursday and imagine we got in. Then we would have to deal with this whole Delaware flip, work with lawyers, incorporate it, and spend on top of that 35,000 euros on lawyer fees. So if you are a startup and you're someone interested in founding a startup, you're interested in go to the YC Combinator, be patient. Don't form a company yet if it's not absolutely necessary. So this information just came in today. And I think for us, it's just a, yeah, why? Because at this point, there's no benefit of having it, our company officially registered this week. So we can also wait until the decision is in. So if we don't get into the accelerator, we just register the company as we intended this week. And if we get in, then well, we just wait and actually we register our company in the United States and we don't have to pay this insane lawyer fee. Wow, that's classic startup, you know? You never know what's happening, but you have to be prepared. There's no way you just can foresee all these things. And yeah, and it's really, really humbled me again to just really have the patience, don't rush things, stay calm, really move through all this journey from a very calm and centered place. And another thing that really inspired me, so it inspired me and humbled me at the same time, I was listening to Paul Graham's essay. I'm going to link it in the show notes. Paul Graham was actually founder of the Y Combinator, early 2000s. He's a computer scientist as well, and he has been writing essays about startups for 20 years. They're amazing. And I think two things he said, like the most critical things to be, to you know, understand, to run a startup, to be absolutely resourceful. How resourceful can you be so you can survive the longest? That means to really minimize your monthly costs so you can play the game the longest, because that's what it's required. It's patience, it's time, it's commitment, and it's the daily actions you put in every day. And what really inspired me, like, because I really believe in this, like he said, it's never this one big feature or this one big launch that really make something go wild. It's this compound effect, this everyday small step. Every day you create a small feature, a small improvement, and you keep doing it every day. You keep growing every week by 10%, 5%. But think in small steps. And this, you will see after 1 year, 1.5 years, the same thing applies as an investment or interest rates. You will experience this compound effect. So don't rely on big jumps. Don't rely on massive launches, massive features that you think would change the game. It's all the little things. Every day, do whatever you can. And also understand this is the game you play. Whatever you can do, whatever's in your control, focus on that. And I think if you can only, I think this is like, I remember my first startup 6-7 years ago. There's so much wisdom out there. So many things like Paul Graham and other former startup founders. The first time you actually run a startup, you almost become ignorant to this. And I mean, I let's talk about not all, but let's talk from my experience, my first startup, because you feel like, you know, that doesn't apply to you and you play a different game. But you know, once you actually go through a big failure and you crash your first startup, you become very humble and you start to listen. I think it's actually one of the biggest learnings and gifts I received after my first startup crash years ago. This humbleness, this patience, this centeredness, this ability to listen and really, really listen and incorporate what other people and other sources might want to tell you. And so this is, I will link it. They're amazing, the essays. It talks about co-founders, the whole journey of a startup, what it really takes, what they have seen over decades now, two decades, what startups make fail or succeed. It's gold. It's just amazing. So it really inspired me to listen to Paul Graham essays. And this whole thing humbled me again, you know, like this, wow, we were close to make a decision which potentially could have costed us 35,000 euros along the way, in addition to lots of dozens of hours of dealing with lawyers. That is, if we get accepted, you know, doesn't mean we'll get in, but it's why shouldn't we be prepared for this case? And it doesn't make a difference if we now wait another 6 weeks to really register our company. All right. So that's what humbled me and one thing that inspired me. And one thing that really stressed me. And it's something I really have to, I'm really so grateful for at the same time for one of my co-founders, Mihai. He really, so I'm a person who can, it's beautiful if you can have really tough conversations and people who bring these tough conversations on the table and you can have this conversation and really grow together. And there was nothing happened in personally. It's just like, it's so amazing because like he thought about it. So when we registered a company, there's like, we have to split the shares. And I did a very simple share split. Hey, we have four co-founders. This is what everyone would get. How do you feel about it? And then like, I'm a person who just does a lot of things on trust. And you know that it can go a long way, but I love the conversation me and Mihai had the other day. It's like, that's all good. But, you know, we need to really think about, we're about to embark on a lifelong journey. And co-founders are like, it's like a marriage. It really is. We need to have very like transparent and clear rules and principles in place. For example, what if someone stops to work after 6 months, after 2 years? Does he really get all the shares after 6 months? Or is there some kind of rule in place that check marks, you know, like you need to be part of the company for at least 12 years to kind of like really unlock all the shares? How does it look like if someone started to kind of like work less where someone else just works more and more? These are all things that are uncomfortable to talk about, but super important to have it talked through, laid out and really written down in written form in the form of agreement. And it's not about really mistrust. It's just about like, it's actually a form of transparency and clear communication, understanding of where we are. It's like this ultimate source of truth. Because once we go down this path and things can go really fast, things can go really, really ugly. And I just noticed from other stories I've heard from investors who, you know, where you talk, there were stories where co-founders were married and then like, you know, this broke apart and this affects the company. It just can get really messy. But it is that, like, I remember this call. I'm so grateful for Mihai. It was a beautiful, beautiful conversation. That's why I'm so proud of this co-founding team. We just nail it. It's such an amazing balance. Still, after this call, I felt very irritated, stressed and anxious. Because of course, there's something I guess I have to really look into, and it's a deep wound or something carry with me that is, you know, I think to avoid this kind of really hard rules and contracts and like, hey, we have to do this. It's not all about trust is good, but you know, like we never know what happens. It could also happen after half a year, like there could be an accident. And some of the founders, you know, like they were not, wouldn't be able to work anymore. But suddenly, imagine one of the founders has 20% of the company and they couldn't work anymore. So then 20% of the company are just locked and, you know, you can't change it. It's just, you can't do anything with it. So these are all the things we have to think about now. And it also, like, I think what really came to me is like, wow, things are getting really real right now. And I think this is like this, my body or my conscience is now kind of to slowly also catching up where my subconscious has been already. And it's kind of also a reality check. And it was a strange moment afterwards. And I was like, wow, this is like really, really getting really real right now. And it could get really fast as well. And we need to be prepared for this, because once things are running, and I'm not saying it's going to happen next month, but you know, by end of the year, why not? It's realistic. At the moment, we've been receiving really positive feedback. But when we are there, we just have to make sure that when things get ugly, and sometimes in life, you know, in stress situations, in uncertainty, it's just very human that sometimes deep shadows and deep sides of us come to surface that we're not proud of, but they will be there. And the important thing is a founding team is to also in these moments to be there for each other, but have also something in place that we can always go back to, like an ultimate source of truth written down, how things will be laid out. And I think Mihai said it perfectly. Also, like any future investors, they love if they see that the founding members really thought about the worst case scenario, and there's no everything like very clean and clear about possible worst case scenarios. And it stressed me out. But on the other hand, I'm so grateful. It was amazing, this conversation. I was like, we both were, I think it's always important. Mm-hmm. And I told Mihai in this call, it's like, it is always important we seek these difficult conversations and we allow it and have a space to have this, because we have to have them. And this again showed me where my strengths are and my weaknesses. And a good sign is that you have a team where some other member is so strong in an area where you are really weak. And this makes it complete. This makes it a company, a unit. It makes leadership a unit. Yes, a company has one CEO, but a CEO is not the one that kind of like leads by himself or herself. A company is always a unit, and it's the unit it's the sum of all small parts. And that's the employees, that's the co-founders. And a CEO, that's what my role I understand. Maybe I'm not the most business savvy. For me, how I would like to see my role as CEO, to really understand, to protect this essence of a company, to make sure we have the right people in the right place to become a unit that is not dependent on one person alone, but can strive even if one person is missing, for example, the CEO, in the long run. And that gave me joy again and really inspired me. I'm grateful for. And another thing that really, really gave me joy is actually my father was for 3 weeks on rehabilitation, because he broke his shoulder last year, and he's 79. But I mean, Austria is amazing. They provide like this, like he's totally fine, but no issues anymore. But he also like, they offer this 3 weeks rehab programs where you go, you're like 24/7. There's like a physiotherapist, there's a doctor, psychologist, and they work with you to kind of like make sure there's everything heals properly and like you're in proper shape. And yeah, I missed him because I'm at the moment staying at my dad's place, and I'm so happy now that he's back. That I again see him in the morning, I can give him a hug. And to be honest, I'm very proud of it. I don't feel ashamed at all at this point of life to experience living with my dad again. I think I mentioned this before in my previous episodes, but it's different to when you're a teenager and then you're a grown-up man, or grown-up at least when it comes to the bodily functions. It is beautiful to just be able to experience a time for me, my father, and because you never know how long I will be here in Vienna and you know how things develop. So it makes me really happy this week. And yeah. And another thing I'm very grateful for, I think there's like my team member, Mihai, this week, and in general the whole team, and I was last week as well. But another thing is just the realization that I'm really able to do what I love. And I think there's a really good differentiation also by Paul Graham. I will link the essay. Well, maybe you can find it now. Paul Graham. Ah, there we go. Yeah, exactly. I think it's crazy. Well, I'm just trying to find the part where it is. Yeah. So I think what many people get mixed up is like when you found something you love, it's not like that every moment is pure joy and pure happiness. But what he argues is like, if you always have the choice between at this moment of time, you can go to the Caribbean, Caribbean beach, or go to Portugal, Australia surfing, or you choose to stay and work on this really hard problem that drives you crazy. And if you choose to stick and stay and work on this hard problem, then you really found something that you love. Because when you found something that you love, you understand it's not that this every moment, short moments, that it's not about giving you happiness in this every moment. It's a long-term feeling. It's a long-term fulfillment. And because the rule about doing what you love assumes a certain length of time. And it doesn't mean do what will make you happiest a second, but what will make you happiest over some longer period, like a week or month. That's a different. Because I love what Paul Graham said. He said, unproductive pleasures pall eventually. After a while, you get tired of lying on the beach. And if you want to stay happy, you have to do something. And if you have found something that you really love, then actually, it means actually overcoming really hard challenges and problems. But you just keep sticking around, because for you, it doesn't feel like a burden. It feels like you're in this because there's no other choice, basically. You would not waste a second if you would decide, now should I go now surfing to the beach or stay at home at 30 degrees, beautiful sun, weather outside, and you stay at home and you just keep cracking or like finding the sparks in a program that have been annoying you for since last night. That's the sign that you found something you really, really love. Because you actually will have more moments where you really have, wow, tough times, in a sense, like they give you headache, and they really make you tired. But you know, you're in it for the long term, and it's something that gives you fulfillment. So I'm very grateful that actually in this period of my life, I found something like this, and I will share with you the essay by Paul Graham, How to Do What You Love. Okay, I will come. The team meeting starts in 12 minutes. I need to prepare a bit more. I give you next week another update how this whole week went. Maybe with another topic, who knows? As in the last episodes described, I need to, this podcast for the next weeks and month becomes like more like a very improvised, very raw reflection of what's going on right now. And, I hope you still enjoy it. Let me know. You can always write me a message on, howtounreasonable.com. Click on an episode, leave a comment, send me an email. In the show notes, you can find some links, how to contact me. And yeah, if you enjoyed this podcast, this episode, maybe you can share it with a friend. And it always helps if you give it a 5-star rating on your own Apple Podcast or Spotify. But other than that, I wish you a wonderful day and until next week.